Welcome to the 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade podcast, a retrospective. You were defeated, left for dead. All is ashes. Your heart stirs, your broken body numbing with the rage of retaliation.
Werewolf the Apocalypse Retaliation, a new board game set in the world of darkness created by the same team behind Vampire the Masquerade chapters. Flyups, imagination leaping ahead.
Hey folks, Brennan here. Thanks for tuning in to our 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade podcast. If you want to reach out or follow us, we're on Facebook and YouTube as 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade, Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch as 25 Years of VTM, and on our website at 25yearsofvtm.com. Support us on Patreon at patreon.com/25yearsofvampirethemasquerade. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
True. That's true. It's going to be hard. So that's a little weird sequence of things to say, considering what DJ said. But we're going to leave that alone because that gets dirtier the more you get into it. So, hi everybody. I'm the guy who doesn't like to cut out stuff like that because it's real. That's what it's like to record for real. I don't know about all the other podcasters out there. That's what it's like to not glam your bullshit up. So, welcome to 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade presents War of the Apocalypse review, as you're going to hear the announcement when we rolled out anyway. And today we're going to be going over the book, the Pharaoh book, Macaulay.
Yes.
Dun, dun, dun. Not guacamole, not even mole. It's Macaulay. Okay. If that's how you pronounce it, I never did find out if that's the correct pronunciation. And terrible me, I didn't bother. I use the Midwest pronunciation if it is, and it's better than what somebody once told me. I'll play a McCole. And I was like, I know it's not
McCole.
I know it's not McCole. So,
it's better than what I hear sometimes, because you'll hear like, son, can you give me one of them jalapenos? Like, what? Yeah, so I can put it on my quesadilla. Kill me.
Kill me, right? How you doing, DJ?
I'm good.
How about you? Life. How about yourself, Mike?
I'm holding on tight. How about that?
This is all one can do at times. So the icebreaker I have today is Adventures in Fatherhood. I know nobody's shocked when your baby has a dirty diaper. Nobody is. I want to share this, though. And I hope one day my daughter hears it, because the embarrassment alone is lovely. We've been changing dirty diapers, but we've been pretty big on it. Moa jumped on this elimination communication, this whole EC style of doing it. It's where you have such an intimacy with your baby from birth that slowly over time you get it used to a pattern of having to signal to you to go to the bathroom. You have to know its urges, see when the baby's trying to go, what it's trying to do. And over time, you eventually get good at it. Now, due to immigration bullshit, I have to call the grand dance. I was gone for months at a time, unfortunately. And that really dropped me out of the race, so I couldn't keep up with it consistently. But it was great to come back and see our child does do signals to let us know when she has to go to the bathroom and, of course, take off diaper and get it going. Doesn't always work, right? Now, it's 9 out of 10, it's going to work, and especially at nighttime. She'll wake up at night, and we're announced that she has to go to the bathroom because in the dead sleep, she goes, ah! She just yells, and we know it's because she has to pee. It's all she can do. She's a little being. She can't talk words, can't nudge us. She's just going to yell, and you know to go. And that's that, which is hysterical. However, wife's vegan. I'm a meat eater. You start introducing food to a baby. You start getting more solid with the food and whatnot. She's eating it. No big deal. Likes some stuff. Likes spicy stuff. Hates. We haven't tried meat yet. The rule is when she's old enough to ask, we'll give it to her. And I'm cool with that. Vegan principles, keep animals alive, hug the earth, whatever. And, it's her mom. DJ, don't look at me that way. I ain't got a choice. I'm a steak-eating fiend, but that don't mean that my daughter's going to be. So we got to give her, we want her freedom of choice to be hers. So there's a period I like to call the joy period where, and it's to be a little graphic, your child doesn't, their boo-boo don't smell like nothing. Right, oh, the formula and whatnot's processed. Most of the waste is gone. She handles it in the toilet anyway. You don't have to worry about it. But then today, I go to hug her, and she's smiling, but she's drool smiling at me. Now, you gotta understand something. I've taken it when they're teething, they get a little drooly, but she tends to be really upset, so I have to console her, I hug her, and, you know, I like to be sweet to her, my daddy. No big deal, but she's not doing it. She comes over to me, and she stands up for the first time, gripping my knee. And she's just looking at me, drooling. I'm like, okay. Doesn't give a high sign of nothing. I'm like, all right, she's cool. I turn away for a second, and then I get the Velociraptor Screamer, which we're now calling, I call it the Nazgul. Now, I know a Nazgul now means the ring wraith, but I thought it meant what they rode, because she sounds like a fell beast, right? It says, it's loud, it echoes through the new place, and then she descends and destroys something nearby, and I'm like, that is our daughter. Like, if I needed proof, that was it, right, Fun? Well, now she's drooling, standing up by me. I don't know why. She released the fell beast scream. I'm like, okay. Moa comes over and picks her up. She's like, oh, hey, sweetie. And she hugs Moa, and she's looking at me still drooling. And I'm like, I don't know why is she excessively drooling? Did she fall? Is she okay? She goes, no, she's teething. It's okay. And I was like, did you fart? She picked her up, and I'm eye height. There is a thing that parents told us repeatedly, almost universal. Every parent couple we came across, and they said, and I quote, that child will somehow shit up her back. She'll be in diapers, and you won't know how, and you won't know when, but the cork will pop and it will go up her back. You won't know. And they look at you with trauma, like they're remembering it and they can't get out of their head, and they're like, you just have no idea it's gonna happen. So I'm like, my child, but she just doesn't flush, we're good. She uses a toilet, we're all good, cool in the gang. Well, now she's still drooling and smiling at me. And I swear to you, on my life, she knew what she did. She knew what she did and just stared at us. I was like, okay. And I told Moa, this is a tag team operation right here. She's like, what do you mean? I just changed the diaper. Like, it's like literally her second mistake in what, 2 months? Like, it's fine. I'm like, oh, I get that. But the last one was what? She goes, she was having trouble and we checked and, you know, whatever. No big deal. We took care of it. This time, though, Moa's like, yeah, okay, get in here. We saw the prize, and the moment that diaper came off, that child is still locked eyes with her daddy and is like, he looked at me laughing. I didn't even ask Moa if I'm like, because normally we team up and like one will wipe the baby down, get her prepped, keep her entertained, the other one takes care of the business. And because EC communication, you use reusable diapers. It means you're washing them by hand and whatnot. That means if she has a mistake, you got to wash it out to take care of it. Mm. I'm in the bathroom washing out this glorious pile. And all I got to say is that I was simultaneously proud and vomiting in my throat the whole time. Because you got to take care of it. And I'm like, what is she eating? And the bad part is I could smell all that vegan stuff that we had ate over the last day. Like, I could tell this is breakfast, this part of lunch. That even smells like banana mixed in with that. What is this? And you're like pulling it out. And I just wanted to share that with everybody because that's part of an icebreaker. For those of you used to walking away for the first 7 minutes of our show, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. Then you come back for the book. But why do we do this? Because research has shown that people who bond with their audience share personal experiences about them. And mine was doo-doo this time around. So for all you parents out there who've experienced this, I have joined the club. I, too, know the never-ending stench up the back. As we'll call, I don't even know what to refer to it. I think we'll call it a worm moment. Like, everything's the worm, right? When that happens, that was like the worm's corruption of our daughter officially. Man, Mike, that's original sin.
The original, that's when she gained it.
Their poop doesn't stink. And when it does, it's original sin and it goes up the back.
I think we figured out what it's called. The shit streak up the spine is now named original sin.
Jesus.
That's what we're gonna have to do. So, oh, I'm sorry, guys. Would you like to share something? I kind of took those minutes.
No,
you got it. You got it. Nope. That's all we need.
I understand. Well, folks, if you're expecting a stellar review of Outstanding Education of How to Play Macaulay, this is a review, but I highly doubt there's gonna be an education. We'll do our best. I mean, I imagine Mike and DJ are planned, but I won't preface it. I'm pretty sure everybody will get what I'm getting at here. If you can't hear my tone, if you're a fan of the podcast from the get-go, you'll note that there are excited tones, and it's a book I love. You could barely stop me. I dive right in. If I'm starting with an anecdote and I'm like now begging Mike and DJ to say something, you might get the impression I might not like something. But if I'm putting on what I like to call my corporate voice. That's what this is, where it's almost white as possible, as I call it. It's because I know I'm about to get into some raw shit. It's that simple. And as I stare at my notes and I've stalled for time enough, we'll just get into it. So, gentlemen, I'm going to ask you what we do typically. How do you feel about the opening story of this particular book? Particularly book. Is that a word? Particular book.
I could barely sort it out. It made more sense later. Right? Once you start getting into who these characters actually are. But it read how I imagine like a fever dream of somebody who's experimenting with psychedelics might be. I got real turned around, but that could just be me. It happens to me sometimes.
Sometimes. What about you, DJ? Did you get a flashback?
I actually did get a flashback. The reason I say that is because one of my favorite novels is actually by the author James Joyce. It's called A Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man. But the way the story starts is because it's all written in stream of consciousness. And I'm all right with most stream of consciousness because, like, the book starts off with, like, at first there was a moo cow and I love the moo cow and the moo cow was awesome. And then mommy and daddy hung out and they always hung out with auntie. And the words start getting a little bit more complex. This was like you just getting dropped into the middle of that moo cow story, but with no context. You weren't like even given like any preface of where it's going on. When I was first reading the beginning of the story, I was like, all right, what's the perspective of the character? And then later on, as Mike says, and we're going to spoil it now, I didn't even see that coming. Just because it's going, I didn't even know it was subjective in the first place. I just thought it was just a stream of consciousness, and I was like, okay, it's going to be one of those types of books.
Well, it seems that you guys enjoyed it. It was mysterious. It made you in a state of, like, psychedelics, and I feel for the sanctity of the podcast. We'll continue on then.
All right.
I feel you reviewed it, and it's a stream of consciousness, and I think Mom always said if I don't have anything nice to say, that I could pass it off to other people. So that's what I was doing, and it seems that you guys said, hey, it was a little trippy, a little hard to think on, but otherwise it was in the intro of the book, and what am I saying? Unless you'd like to extrapolate.
I mean, I'm just going to blow it out right now because it's actually worth mentioning, right? Spoiler slash no spoiler, because we just got to get into it. At first, I'm thinking to myself as I read this story, as with most Pharaoh books and or any book that you read, it's always from the perspective of someone who's actually in it and or belongs to this group. It's not. It's from the perspective of Garu, who has the one thing that is very, very...
Red flag number one. Please continue.
Right. It's the one thing that makes Mokola special is this ability called Nemesis, right? To be able to recall memories. But for whatever fucking reason, the Mokola decided, let's give it to the perspective of Agaru instead of giving it to a Mokola whose story it should be because it's their book. So instead, they give it to Agaru, who you don't even know is Agaru in the beginning because you take... I think the only like thing that gave it away was they spoke about a Glasswalker early. I had glossed it completely over. And it wasn't until I started reading further on where the guy's name is Peter, by the way. And he's like, everyone else has a name like Jeffo, Mawalu, right? Very, very like indigenous names. But here comes Pete, right? Corporate Pete. My dude, Pete. Anglo
he's
Pete.
He's the one.
He's
the one.
It's like that thing from like Paul Mooney when they talk about Last Samurai had to be who? It was Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise was the Last Samurai.
Like, why?
Massimo Higgins was Daniel Day-Lewis. And now we got Pete, the last of McCoy.
So, look, they reference him later and confused me. Somehow Pete has acquired the memory by like eating it.
So I thought about that too, and I said to myself, I'll make it make sense. A long time ago, Pete was some dumbass kinfolk of his tribe. I don't give a shit what he was, and he comes across a saltwater crocodile, which is really what the Macaulay are. They're mostly that than anything, is what I've read, and he got himself perished.
He was unalived. Okay, he was unalived.
So, but Pete is so likable that inside the intestines of this Macaulay, whatever it passed, well, the circle of life, right? The bugs renew the poo to the group that turns the, they die and become plants. And millions of years down the road, someone ate that and it evolved into another gator that turns out they were not a gator, a wolf who somehow ate a berry that might have been the last boo-boo of whatever sheep ate it. And mystically, when he had a kid, his kid had some of this DNA, and that's Peter.
But what about the snow plague?
I have no idea. Okay, go for it. Go ahead and explain it. Go ahead and explain it. Like, to me, like, good.
I don't have an explanation. Somehow, Peter caught the snow plague that was destroying the Garu, because we care about that in the Macaulay book for some reason. And, like, in triumphing over the snow plague, he also acquired the memory, the mimesis that is normally only for the Macaulay. Right? And so because he's acquired the mimesis, they, like, in this book, they treat him like their retarded step cousin. He's got the memory, so he's permitted to have conversations, even though they make sure to emphasize under normal circumstances they kill him just for being a Garu.
What got me to twitch and snap reading this book multiple times, like, enough that Mo and I had a heated discussion about maybe I should take a break, was, full disclosure, I've owned this book a long time. I've read the character section. I've read Mimesis, and I got the idea. And I was given some stellar background, some players who really grooved with it and wanted to play them. And so in a Werewolf game I ran, I was like, yeah, man, I'm going to let you tell the story of your Macaulay people from your background, and we'll have it in game, and it's great. And they were amazing, outstanding authors compared to what I'm reading. They were profound in what they could deliver and make it happen. Because when I'm reading, to go through it officially, right? To, like, to be like, yeah, I've read it in parts, and maybe one time I gave it a one through glance, but didn't, because, you know, if I wasn't playing one, I didn't have it. And I tend to not grab Farrah in a werewolf game. They're NPCs. I don't need to go that deep. So that's how it is. And I've definitely portrayed them. But to read that, I was, and honestly, according to this book, I'd be wrong in my portrayal of them. I was afflicted. You know what I mean? I just couldn't get it. And then I'm like, all right, well, let's forget about Pete right here. That's what I did. I was there reading that story, and I was like, I'm going to shunt you off to the side, because we got to read something that makes this make sense. I don't get it. Usually they get ruined, pulled forward. And then they do. And they start saying, let's talk about the Macaulay. They're different, Farrah, right? That's clear. We got to understand that millions of years ago they existed. That's what they say. And that they're the memory of Gaia. That's their purpose. That's pretty deep. The memory of Gaia. That means 200 million years ago, whatever happened, whatever went on since then, these Macaulay know it. It's in their DNA. It's like ancestral memory. It's instinctually in DNA memory. It's instinctually in them. And they do it uniquely. They hold to that theme in the book. I think that's pretty cool and unique. Let's move on. By the way, if this contradicts anything that you guys feel, want to talk more, please do. I'm just going to say, I look to the good and mind the good that I enjoyed. And I would like to get that ray of sunshine out. But please feel free, because I won't hesitate to mention the stuff that triggered me. Go ahead, Mike. And by the way, trigger, I can't use that word. I don't like using anger, because I wasn't really. Was I tickled? Did my cynicism go up? Yes. So my, I don't know what you would call that. I was hulking out. We'll just call it that. I was hulking up. And there were parts of it that made me do that. Like, really? Can I talk to you for a minute? Who wrote the book? Just a tad. But I let it go. And I was like, I didn't write the book. No one paid me to do it. Must have been great. So we'll just leave it there. And I don't hold anything against them, because I know people love it. But those people, I know what type of players you are. So go ahead, Mike. Sorry, you were trying to say.
I was just going to add to your point about the mimesis specifically. Something I did kind of appreciate is this book gives the impression that, like, to be a Macaulay is not just to be a dragon Farrah or a reptile Farrah. It's to be a particular category of spirit, because they do the weird, there's moments where they say they interbred with other Farrah, and that breeding, like, produces a different kind of Macaulay sometimes, but the through line is the mimesis, so that even when they end up being reptiles again, they're carrying memories from, like, multiple Pharah. I don't know. That interested me. It made me want to explore that.
What they're reaching for is they're trying to tell you without telling you a connection. And it could just freaking say that. Mm. That there's a spiritual connection through the memory of what you are. That if you're a shifter, you already share a pool that you come from. Think about it. Gaia's going around, it'd be good to get pregnant again. You know, I'm going to create this group and that group and this group and that group and the whole world and everything. And she's just spreading life everywhere. Basically hemorrhaging every day. She's birthing something new. And then she went, well, who's going to protect my kids? I don't know. And the Macaulay say, well, 200 million years ago, that was us. What? Well, not us. The dinosaur kings.
The king.
What? Well, okay. You mean like dinosaurs ruled the earth. Okay, cool. I'm with you. I'm a fan of Jurassic Park. Right? Chaos theory. Right? Whatever. That's what you're getting at? Okay, I get it. It was primal. It was wild. The world was perfect. Well, that makes sense. Pangea, everything's one. There's even like a Pangea super world you can go to in the game that they have through the Umbra. So I get it. Now we're here. This makes sense. It all ties in. And then you hear Womanga, I think is the name in the book, the Macaulay. They go and seek for info. And not just Womanga, right? Because that's an NPC in the book. And you're thinking to yourself, oh, well, this is just what they believe. No. They say directly what a Macaulay remembers is what happened.
Yeah.
And then out again, they say it again. What a Macaulay remembers is what happened. There's other conflicts that remove that and convolute it, but no, it's the strength of their mimesis, their ability to recall it and relive it is their ability to tell you what happened. So this book should have told you the truth, is what I'm getting at. But let me tell you something. You guys like Alex Jones?
I hate listen from time to time.
Okay, well, I kept on the tidbits here about the dinosaur kings and how you're told that the reptilian tool makers that existed 200 million years ago, they were the original guardians of Gaia. Their city surpassed any work of human make, and their memory was all that was needed. No need for schools or written records, but we did have scholars and we did have teachers. So it kind of bothers me on that point alone. Like, I'll stop there for a second. There's more, but like, if you had scholars and teachers, but you got this memory and you don't need to be taught and you were super beings and I had to write nothing down. And basically what you're saying is when you're born, you knew all the things you needed to know about what came in the past and you were great. So therefore, if you know all the techniques that are there and you don't have like scholars research, that's why they have books. Because they got to pilfer through, find the right knowledge, and bring it up. But if you already have all that in your head, what you gotta have a scholar for?
Hold on.
Did you just describe the great race of Yith from like Lovecraft? It's like they existed before existed. Back in the forever ago times, they had everything technologically advanced, but there's no trace of them. But you know what lives on? Their memory and their ability to project. Is this like... Oh, God.
Well, what you're pulling on, you can't even burn them for that, because where this thought comes from is Atlantis.
No, you're right.
The obsession of Atlantis, the occult around the Atlantis, and the bullshit hype from it.
Uh-oh. There we go. Mike's dead.
You guys just went World of Darkness, Cthulhu Mythos, fucking Aristotle. Who was the philosopher who made up Atlantis? There's too much.
There is too much, but what DJ opened up, by the way, that barrel of nonsense DJ opened up is a door that I could step through that he could talk to that just melted Mike's brain. So we'll pull it back to the World of Darkness. We'll just keep it to Alex Jones. Okay. We'll just keep it there. But what DJ said, folks, was I've heard this story before, and I went, and you know what? It gets deeper, don't it? It gets deeper. Cause it's not good enough that it's that, right? So let's forget about my scholar teacher. Foo-foos, right? Let's just keep going. Their city surpassed any work of human make, and their memory was all that was needed. Now, I keep looking at this going, if they weren't humans and they were dinosaurs, they were lizards, why the hell were you in a building? Why did you need a building? What did you need to build glass and cement? And what you need, a garage for your car? What are you, the freaking Flintstones? What is this? And then I thought about it. It's the dinosaurs TV show.
Not the baby. Right. Not the baby.
That's what it is. It's the dinosaurs TV show. That's what they're saying. The dinosaur kings were like, they're just chilling because it describes that they work jobs. They got priesthood. They worship the sun. Everything was to the sun. Helios was all. And I went, wait a minute. Didn't Gaia put you there as the guardians of Gaia? Yeah, that was just some side business everybody had to do. What? Come again? Yeah, we worship the sun, but Gaia was cool. Why is it worship Gaia? Because Gaia made you. Like, why is she not like that? Wouldn't that be the real? Nah, not us. The sun's better. Like, she cool. She on the level. We know who she is, but we defend her. That's what we give her. We protect her. And because we do that, we got to worship the sun, who ignores us. He just gives us, he just melts us and keeps us warm. And we like basking in the sun because we're lizards. So that's where we're at. And I'm like, all right, cool. All right, cool. I'm still with it. I'm hanging barely. Then I saw the cities and I was like, you're losing me. That was like a devastating hit. And then, okay, instinctual memory. Okay, I like the memory thing again. But as well as the ability to memory walk with perfect clarity, then what do we need anybody having a profession for? Like, what's going on? Okay, I'm baffled. Then they're like, you know, don't worry. We still got hunters. You need to eat. And they're like, oh, yeah, but wouldn't you have found a way to do it? Like, wouldn't you realize that? Oh, it's just too much. That was just skipped over in that regard. And then it says, very quickly, lasted 150 million years. That is the longest reign of a golden era I've ever read.
Yeah.
So, 150 million years, Mike, until a mystery catastrophe called the Great Dying, or as I call it, the Nothing. Right? Atreyu, remember the Nevering story? I thought the Nothing would have been perfect there. Instead of the Great Dying, the Nothing. Mm-hmm. Or what they eventually put there, which is the wonder work of the worm, which proved to me that Willy Wonka's chocolate factory is the obvious predecessor of the worm. That came before Pentex.
Wait, Willy Wonka. Not the worm.
Is it raining? Is it snowing? Willy Wonka, Mike.
The dissolver.
The great
the worm. True, the dissolver. The worm dissolver. Is a pejorative given to the dissolver by the evil Garu.
Mike, you brilliant bastard. I was wondering to myself today, I said, well, how would you clean up fizzy lifting drinks? That's why he was so pissed. Well, clearly you would use the dissolver. Right? The dissolver would handle it. Oh, it's so perfect. The worm's not corrupt. He's just a clean freak. Oh, it's so good. Okay. Yucks aside, because that was me trying to provide humor to not Hulk up, right? So I'm like, all right, we're here. And then it says... Well, the great death, the great dying caused them all to be extinct. Whoa, what book am I holding then?
Because it couldn't have got everybody.
So, no, it did. No, it did. And you had to read close to get it. As they said, the Macaulay were extinct, but their kin remembered in the blood and in time bore the new Macaulay, making them the obvious survivors of the apocalypse cycle, by the way. Right. So this book inadvertently confirms what the kindred of the East are. And honestly, the Eastern stuff they had for the Kwaizhen, kindred of the East. This is cyclical. It is in cycles,
which would make sense because they got the Eastern dragons. They got some Macaulay to tell them the truth.
And so that's straight up what that would be. The Zonglung. Right. We know about that. We didn't get to that social structure, but we'll go back because this is for us, really, when we're reviewing, going through like this. And we'll go back and go, by the way, guys, for those of you who worship them. Yes, we did read and get this down. But in those who might have interest, by the way, but we like to have fun. We are. So the point is the Macaulay get extinct and they say that through the blood, their kin maintain life because whatever happened, whatever Macaulay saw would happen, died. That implies that some might have survived, but no, they more or less say they died out and then they resurge later. They spend 60 million years being off the stage, asleep in the memory of their descendants. And then when human beings evolved, that's when Macaulay started being born again. And as they call it, they begin waking up into the new world, into the new age, and you begin understanding what's going on. Now, Mike, you're holding your head like, what the?
So when the apocalypse cycles, we are to believe that the Pharaoh just like choose new positions among the species that make it through the most recent apocalypse, rename themselves and just continue because of like with the breeding thing, right? You, you have Macaulay kin, but this is before mankind. So the Macaulay must have had kinfolk among a variety of smaller Saurians who don't get killed by an asteroid.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys live 60 million years waiting for a new apex species. And then all of the Pharaoh just like take their positions again when humans come along.
So,
because what's going on with the Macaulay who were Korax and the Macaulay who were what was it, Camazotes, and what about the Garu who haven't come along yet, but all these other Pharaoh who we know are attached to species who were alive back in those times, like the Rokea.
Well, the crocodiles didn't die,
right?
And saltwater crocs, alligators, those things, those are what Macaulay are. Like, if you need that to answer your question where it is,
yeah,
that's what it is. That was their kin. That was their descendants. That's what survived. Mm-hmm. And we know crocodiles have been around since the dinosaurs. Right? That's where they're at. Breeds, especially the saltwater croc. I think it was the largest predator that existed from back then. That was, like, obvious, like, the least change for millions of years or whatever. National Geographic, a long time ago, I read an article on the John. I was like, oh, wow, okay, cool, moving on. But regardless, the point is that that's what they're implying.
Okay.
Is that through the DNA, right? There's a theory too. There's theories out there that certain people are born, like even human beings, this theory is a part of, and monkeys and whatnot, that every species is born with an innate understanding of certain things that they all exhibit and do. And it was fascinating to me reading about a baby, but I won't bore you with that. I feel like it'd steal a whole podcast about baby stuff. I'm fascinated. I love babies because I have one. And that's the point. But the issue is that it's fresh in my mind, not in yours. And if you're single, why would you give a shit? So there it is. We don't do that. But what I will tell you, it's fun to look up animal theories and philosophies, and the things that people believe about animals will trip you out. And something, because there's scientists going, you're wrong. Right? That's what I love about it. Like, there are people who feel that pets have these immense, deep emotions and whatever. And science goes, you're wrong. And they go, we don't care. We have Facebook. We join groups of people that think what we do, and this is what happens. I know Fluffy wanted to be named Fluffy because they pushed the alphabet letters off the fridge that were magnetic, and the F fell off. And I know the F is significant, and so I held on to that F until they did it again, and then the L fell off. And then it happened all the way to the Y. Fluffy is what it's spelled. I knew it. I knew it. It was a game it liked to play, and then it never touched them again once we started calling it Fluffy. So that means our cat liked being called Fluffy. And what I would like to think is, excuse me, little stupid, something was on those letters, probably the light in the morning or something reflecting off of them, and your cat loved to screw around with them. I don't know if you moved your fridge, cleaned them, or whatever you did when you put them back up. It didn't do that no more. Or, like cats exhibit, they got bored. So while you're worshiping a plastic letter made by a Dollar General store, your cat's running around wondering what you're doing, and you can have your theory you want to, but the point is, you can get as crazy as you want believing in nonsense, is what I'm trying to get to you, Mike. What this is saying is that the Macaulay are not nonsense. They have mimesis, and that is the literal spiritual power they have to dive within and through a deep dream state, relive these memories, and know that they are real.
All right.
That's what they have access to. You read the same thing I did. Don't be mad at me.
Yep. Nope. Got it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So because of this, that makes Macaulay cool. In so far as that. But when you're talking about species jumping, and they proved that because they broke that fourth wall by making it to where a guru could carry Macaulay memory. And you're wondering how, like why. The answer is just they wrote it that way. Now, the precedent would be, it's supposed to be that the Pharaoh come from, and if you need it, I can explain it, but I shouldn't have to because they should have explained it. Okay? All Pharaoh come from the wild. We've described about it. Every piece of the triumvirate there had a piece of the pie in their creation. They all represent something of it. So therefore, if they're the super predator of the animal they represent, it makes sense that they all come from the same bucket of energy. So in the case of the Macaulay, if it's an aspect that they have a unique background or spiritual power that can be taught, well, okay, it can be taught, except they'll tell you it can't be taught. You either have it or you don't. It's not something XP grants you. It's something you have off the bat, apparently, and that's what you need. So if an ST said, cool, this werewolf has it, and then comes with a background that says, I wasn't always a werewolf, Well, that's a proof in the pudding of reincarnation you're talking about, right? That puts you in another bracket of what's going on, but really puts you in the Stargazer wheelhouse. But wait a minute, you said this dude's a Glasswalker. So I'm trying to figure out what ancestor was a Makole that came from that branch and came over, was reborn now a Glasswalker. Like, how special does Pete have to be here? To suddenly
like
be
scale
here.
Scale from one to Sam Hate, or like...
Oh yeah, scale from one to Sam Hate. I'm with you on that. Yeah, that's what I felt. And you can't get away from it. And so because that irritates you, you should probably walk away from it. Because that's somebody's love child that put a lot of effort into it and said, hey, this makes sense to us and this is what we want. So this is what we did. And we got to write the book. You, boy howdy, you are correct. But we get to review the book and I think it's shit. I think it's a crap thing to do because you had special with Nemesis. You had special with Makole, and you established some things in this book that make it not make sense that you would do that. Now, one of them is that the Makole we should learn more about here is, granted, they have a super king background about the reptile people ruling the world, and this verifies that Trump was correct, that Alex Jones was correct. Like, all this nonsense they're talking about the lizard people ruling Washington, the White House, they're Makole. So let's move on. We know what's in the world of darkness now. That's why America's fucked. Man, 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 man. All right, cool. We get it. No problem. This book makes a lot of sense. But I could tell you why I know that there were people who pull away from it or go, what are Makole? Because those people went to read that far. It was put in a book too early. And the moment they read that, they were like, I'm done. And through it, that's what I wanted to do. If this wasn't my thing, if I didn't have to do this, I would have just walked away from it. I'd have been, fuck, they took me for my money. You know, and that is it. That's exactly what I felt like. This utter trash. And why I said it was trash is because there might be good stuff in it, but it's hard to get past that glaring, you're just screwing around now. You're not even writing to a common theme. And so I then said, I owe it to you two, who will go on the journey and no doubt explored further in the continent than I did. And I had to at least make my own way through the brush to figure it out. And I said, okay, if Menesis' unique power to access memories inherited from ancestors, which connect them to the distant past when dinos walked the earth, well, it makes sense. If dinosaurs ruled and there was nothing else as they claim, we all technically come from them in some capacity. Now I'm on board with the Menesis, and now I'm just going to hand wave how a werewolf has it. Because, hey, if we're all descendants of it, fantastic. I guess that's the way it is. And we'll move on. And yes, Mike, I did what you did, but I let it go. Just because I can't figure it out, I'm not the smartest person in the world. If I can't figure it out, doesn't mean I can't. It doesn't have an explanation. It just means I'm not on board for it. You know, and I can be willfully obstinate. So I'm trying to be like, cool, if it's out there, maybe you let us know. But ultimately, I'm leaving that to you or whoever enjoys that. Not my thing. But then it rolls on. They have no tribal structure. All right, right on. Because I don't see a T-Rex hanging out with other T-Rex. They're territorial as F. They got to eat. I'm not going to share my meat with anybody, and I'll eat a T-Rex to prove it. Makes sense to me. And then they add, but they're not pack creatures. Okay, well, if you don't have a tribal structure, it makes sense you're not a pack creature. But they're also not solitary creatures. And I went, okay. you don't have a tribe. You don't hang out in packs. You're not solitary, though. Look, what are you trying to tell me in that logical progression of thought here? And then it says, well, we hang out in clutches.
Okay. Not packs, clutches.
Okay. All right, fine. We'll let it go. We know it's literally semantical. But clutches are the Makole and kin of an area that operate like a family unit with the purpose of preserving the memory of a certain area that's of importance. So and they've always done that. What's that?
So like septs?
No. In fact, you can't even make a relation to a sept. So what a sept is that it's a spiritual set of significant energy where you invite a spirit to come and house it and represent a sept that you grow from that cairn. Really, that's not even a sept. That's a cairn, right? That's like the heart of the cairn.
Right.
Would be where the spirit sits. But the sept is the social structure of werewolves that hang out around it to protect and serve that cairn. See how it works?
Like a clutch.
No. Because what a clutch is that they don't have a totem they have to have or at all to be a clutch. The three of us could be a clutch, and that's no big deal. We're like family. We're like brothers. We look out for each other. We do it. And each one of us is in a particular area together to defend the memory of the area. You get it? Not a spirit, not another access to the Umbra. the memory of a place. So you got to look at time differently. Time is not for the immortals when you look at it this way. This is like if time could be observed at any given point because you lived many lives through it, and that genetically you're inheriting the memories from time to time to time, or in dreams you can access it and visit it, then that area of land has a significance to it for some reason. Now, it could be anything, and they really leave that open for anything. And the point is that your clutch may have a significance there because millions of years ago, your group invented sidestepping and taught it to the werewolves when things were great. Well, that significance, that was a bonding moment that turns tragic with the advent of millions of years later, the War of Rage, right? That's how that would work. Mike, I'm trying to spin what could be significant, but it doesn't have to be the great wolf Fenris pissed here, and now the clutch hangs out to guard the urine. That doesn't make sense.
Right.
But what does make sense is if we hold this area, because understand how it works. Clutch guards the memory. Then there's another specific office title of a Makole, usually solitary, called a wanderer. And a wanderer goes between clutches. And what they do is they dive into the memories of those clutches. And they access what has happened, transpired, what's going on, up to the current point. And in this, they gain like the gossip and learn what's going on for that clutch. And so, because it's alien to you, Mike, is because you learn werewolves and tribes and moods and then social and backbiting and manipulation and whatnot. And this can't be fake. A wanderer goes between clutches, experiences this deep trance-like dream, or dives into the waters of the lake or stream it's by, and they just sit and return to home for a bit, but they relive what goes on, learn what it is, come out, and they move on to the next clutch and keep them all informed without there ever being a misinterpreted word in that capacity. It's so, added to the memory, and now they know.
So just, I'm just making sure. Here's what I'm hearing. The big important thing that makes a clutch distinct from a sept or a more generic gathering of Pharaoh is that they are devoted to memories of regions and not spirits.
Correct.
Yep. If the main thing is to remember everything, think about it this way. You just created a cult. You could just say from here on out, everyone will remember Mikey Big Toe, Mikey Two Tone, whatever the case is, right? And then you have these group of people in your neighborhood that just believe in that. Kind of like Candyman. In fact, that's probably a good story about it, right? Because if you think about it that way, that Candyman legend continues to live on because that group just continuously believes it. And as every generation goes, that memory will always foster itself. So now you have the... you have access to their memories as well because you can always touch upon that Candyman story.
Yeah, I'll go with it. I could feel that to a degree. And I think it's the very more serious, how did they survive being wiped out? It's because those memories were passed to their kin through the blood. And they were able to keep it. Now, they didn't know why they had this mnemesis because they didn't know how to access it. But eventually, over time, one of them, the Makole, were born again that could. Then, because remember, that's how Makole is. They're not like any other Pharaoh. In adolescence, they don't know shit. They don't exhibit anything. No spirit comes and says hi. They don't know nothing. They run around and do their thing. Then one day, when they mature, they're like, and fall into a trance, dream about the dinosaur kings of legend and Makole of old, and don't even fully understand what's going on. But they live like lifetimes witnessing all this, and then wake up inherently understanding what their new war form is going to be, and what their purpose is, and what the Makole do, and their place in society. Nobody else does that. They were like self-taught by their ancestry immediately. And then they come out. Now, to me, that makes them the baddest ass shifter they have yet. Right? Jim, that we've reviewed. Right? That's pretty tight. You wake up knowing your purpose and what's going on. But what's the limit then? If they're super beings and omniscient, what's going on? But they're not omniscient, are they? Because each clutch has a different area. Not all areas share the same memory. It's different parts of the memory of what has gone on and transpired. So the wanderer's important role is to connect one memory to the next and to try to unite what's left. But the problem is the War of Rage has wiped out so many Makole that Gaia is practically useless or brain dead, as they point out. That's the Makole's great tragedy. If we're here to be Gaia's memory, she has forgotten most of what she's supposed to know, because with our death and rebirth and with the few of us that are left, What does she have left to remember and draw upon? And so if it's a war of rage and this is indeed the apocalypse, maybe the werewolves are correct. And if we die this time, it's gone. Because Gaia might be here, but if she's brain dead, what does it matter?
Right,
that's
right.
That's how that works. I mean,
and they can't retreat to the Umbra. Right. And there are so few of them that when a clutch is forced to move, by the time one of the Wanderers comes back, he may not know where to find them and just assume or report that they're dead. Like what happened in right. Australia. Okay. All right.
So it's a bit to chew on, but that is more or less how it is. It's the fear of dying and losing what was literally, but they have groups, right? So if you're cool with what a clutch is, Mike, and we got you where Wanderers are, I think that's everybody listening. What the fuck are those? Okay, now I think I get it. I hope you get it. Then we get to something unique, streams. Now, I think this is interesting. Groups of clutches ally into what they call streams. And it's as close as they get to a tribal affiliation, really, but it's not because of that. It's because these groups of clutches, these streams, control vast territories. That's really what it is. But they don't cover the whole world because that's what they've lost. So when you think about it, you have the Goomagon. And I'm going to throw this out to you guys to share because I like sharing stage here. There's four streams that are left. So what's the Goomagon, DJ?
The Goomagon are the ones that are primarily in Australia, primarily created of Melanesians and Aborigines. And they are the forerunners, or they're the ones that could tap the deepest into the deep Umbra because of their spiritual connection. However, their ties to the modern world is kind of put away. For the most part, they really are more backwater than anything else one would commonly say, but that's not true because they actually are the ones to get the closest to. But there's so few of them left, much like the story in general regarding the Mokole, that in order to be able to seek them out, they have a lot of wisdom to impart. They just are not as many to go through.
And then you have the Makara. And Mike, you want to tackle them?
Yeah, the Makara are the Mokole, primarily from the Indian subcontinent and areas nearby. They are the stream associated with water. They somewhat stereotypically tend to be philosophers and wise men. And they have something about their relationship to the beast courts that I can't quite recall. But they're not the Zhonglong. They're just like, you know, neighbors.
They're great negotiators, right? And they're good to point out the negotiators because they're on the Indian continent. Yeah. So India would be their stomping grounds, but not all of India. In fact, it's like the mid towards the ocean going south is where they're at. And that's where that connection to the beast courts is coming from. They're able to negotiate and are welcome because of their social complexity in India. They have a good idea of how to handle themselves at the beast courts and do so accordingly. What's the beast courts? The Henge Yokai, the shapeshifters of the East, excuse me. They have their own unique court. And honestly, the Mokole are one of the main stages that's there. And we'll get to why here in a second. But what we haven't mentioned here is that for both breeds, all of them, we're just going to leave it out. We're not going to list them for any other reason other than to say they have like this Sukid form, which is basically like their kin is the best way to put it. They could take that form because it's based on where they're at. And so a lot of them are like, you know, like I said, saltwater crocs, monitor lizards,
Komodo dragons.
These are basically what they're tied to based on the area. This is not their war form, but the relevance is the fact that if you know those animals, you can very real look up, you get an idea of the visual of them in that regard that they might be born to, but they could be human or they could be some of these creatures. And that's just how it is. And the Mokole Membe, DJ.
The Mokole Membe come from the
Mokole. You know what, DJ? I'll leave you the special one. You the special one. There's a tie you have there to it. So the Mokole Membe I'll take. They're the stream of the fighters. This is the ones that were, they have Africa and the Americas. And they're famous for being the Mokole that are known to participate in the War of Rage. You hear of the Mokole dying in the War of Rage and the few heroes they had there. It's this stream that they mentioned. And they were not entirely wiped out, but they did pay a steep penalty for it. And the Mokole remember them for it. And this is the ones most likely to have encountered a lot of the other Fera too that may remember the Mokole. And that's just how it goes. That's their significance. But DJ, the last one.
The last one, the Zhonglong, they happen to be the ones from the Henge Yogai court. They are the ones that have suffered the least amount of damage to their stream because of the way that they've set up their court in general. Whereas the Makara happen to be the philosophers / diplomats, these are strictly the philosophers. They are aesthetically bound on their particular end. The forms of their dragons as well, in terms of what they could take, are a lot more mystical in nature too. In fact, they have, some of them might even have manes, where other reptiles might be like, oh, that's too much bird-like. These mystical creatures, or so they are, claim to be as such. And they also happen to have the most interesting effects, being representations of fertility, which they also go over in the book at one point. But apparently, they're, these dragons be fertile.
And I'm going to try to edit that out, but that was a plane. I hope that didn't zone you out, DJ. I apologize.
No,
I can't, I can't control flying patterns. So that's, sorry. That's where that is. So, but that said, the Zonglin have a super importance because they connect directly to the, well, Hengei Yokai book and so on. And even still, they also connect to the Kindred of the East because they have like a brief mention connection there too, in that regard. So that's three books of connection that make that, oh, okay, now I get it. And we're here into it. Now, what I'm going to do is jump to the Macaulay of today, because I think that's what a lot of folks are like, that's great. We kind of hear what they're about and what they have. What makes Macaulay badass? Let's talk about the one reason most people want to play Macaulay. And Mike, when you read this, you had to read, of course, the power section and what they do. What drew you, and I know it drew you, to the Macaulay?
Nothing. I don't know what you're talking about, Bob. Nothing at all. The Macaulay are dragon people that have giant war forms, and they're impossible to defeat by any one Gyro.
Why is that, Mike?
Because, Bob, they're big scary dragons who worship the sun and do powerful things.
Is that it, DJ?
No.
No,
No. It's just all right. So
Mike's trying to dodge the bullseye that he's been painted with since day one. We'll let him this one, time.
The Macaulay. I'll turn on the Cambro for a second and DJ. Number one, the Macaulay could actually remember anything, even if it doesn't belong to them, because of the way that the story goes. That people could remember everything, not only because you were a Macaulay at one point in the distant past, but your kin may have made it with other people. You also may potentially have access to those people. There are abilities where you could actually meditate and gain abilities for the day, like just download them like Neo into your sockets of their brain meats to be able to use them for the day. Not only that, but unlike other Pharaoh who usually get taught gifts by particular types of spirits initially, as they're being passed on to them, Macaulay could just go, hold on a second, let me see if I remember this being. Yeah, I remember that one time that Mud Puppy taught me how to do this. All right, cool, download it. And they learn their gifts that way as well, which is, it's so easy, but it's true. They can literally just remember, hold on a second, can I remember this? And like Trinity, it's like the Matrix. Trinity will be like, give me one second, I'll remember how to ride this motorcycle.
And you all certainly right, can look at it that way, but pre-Trinity, I want you to understand that was pretty cool. Right? It was an idea, right? That's how it went. And let's add that to the effect, right? So that's just one. The one I was driving toward was the fact that the basics of all shapeshifters as well, the shapeshift. So what do they get? Are they just were crocodiles? Is that it? They just get to be a were monitor lizard? Who fears the Krynos version form of the were Komodo?
No, that's right. You get the Build-A-Bear version. I'm sorry, the Build-A-Croc version.
There you go. There you go. This lets you customize what your sleeping, dreaming dragon form is that you're going to take your war form on. And there's even stuff to get really crazy, like I've heard exaggerated descriptions, but someone pointing out that you can be like Godzilla.
Well, so the thing that I was looking for and that I don't remember finding is like strong restrictions on what you can combine. Because
you won't
find
it.
Since their Sukid form is like some tertiary reptile, I expected like a Krynos that might be different because it's based on what you dream. And no.
What they're going for is that because you're dreaming it and you're the latest Macaulay, you get to pick and choose from the attributes of your past. As DJ's been fond of saying, download those parts that you remember and that becomes your unique form. And now you're the unique version, right? So it's like you morph in Power Rangered into a Super Borg Zord. Of a lizard, and it's the only Pharaoh species that gets to do this. It's not set in stone. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting, but I could see the draw, and it's really the only draw for a lot of people that I've seen asked to play this. is that you can build a one-man wrecking crew. Or what one friend told me, I'm building so nothing can ever hurt me. And I was like, yeah. And you just got to let that go. You know what game you're playing when someone says, we're playing a fair game and we have a Macaulay so no one else can play one. And it's like, oh boy. Right? That's a thing. And if it's your thing, that's what you do. That's why you have this book. I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying for me, I know I'm in for an interesting ride when I hear that. I'm a guy of stories. I like a good story. I'm just not certain I've really had a good reason to hear why somebody's the size of a house. Is like, oh, man, I've heard it all. Like, I'm like a T-Rex, but like a three-story building T-Rex. You know, we would like super armory scales and everything else.
And all extra right? limbs.
And then inevitably, when they take that form, like you do, SWAT, military, deploy, Pentex comes with special nets, the whole nine. And don't worry, we can slim down and run away. And you're just looking at this person at game and you're looking at the storyteller going, when do we stop playing this right now? Like, there's suspension of disbelief and just utter ridiculous. And that crosses into that realm if you don't discipline. But what if you keep it simple? Can you build something that's more digestible? Yeah, like anything.
You mean like a Danny DeVito version of Godzilla?
Nope. I mean like your last podcast that you did about the Sabbat packs. It's your white sheet of paper. What you say is on it goes, folks. It's your white sheet of paper. That's what this whole camp will tell you. Your paper, your rules. Just live it up. Doesn't have to make sense. You already paid us the money for it. Next book, right? That's how it goes. So we'll just let that be the answer. But that is cool if you're into that. But I didn't feel any love or connection there. Because I'm the person who likes to fall in love with the classics in the World of Darkness. Give me something terrifying. Let me give you an example. I got Bastet. Why? Who knows the goddess Bast? You know, Egyptian pantheons, you'll get it. That had precedent. That had room. That had an idea. Warring with Set, the Setite connection, stuff like dark, bad stuff. Okay, you get a pass. Bast likes magic. There you go. We're cool. Let's move on. You have Were Serpents. Yeah, no shit. Right? From Conan to anything else you want to talk about that dealt with snakes. Set's bad, but what about the Were Serpents? Can you see where they're at? Cool. We'll get a book for them, but they're not what you think, Bob. Other cultures have a fascination with snakes, and we're going to take a cool look at them and see what cool stuff we can do with that. Well, okay, I'm with that. You can get behind that. Hypnotism, weird cult groups. We've always had a fascination. Snake dancers. I mean, our cultures everywhere use poisonous snakes especially as a big thing and draw for what they do. So I get the love of it, and I get the fascination for it. How about were-sharks? That works. That tracks. Korax, it's the Raven Method. Odin, we get it, right? There's this mythology and lore that attaches to it. I haven't read everything. Crocodiles. Gustav. I'm just going to throw that out. Crocodiles. Dinosaurs were already cool. Jurassic Park already happened. Like, I like my Jurassic Park like Jurassic Park, and I like my dinosaurs where they belong. And like the Mesolithic period or whatever, the Paleolithic period, and like that's it, and they're done. I like them in a museum. I like dinosaur movies. Land of the Lost was cool. But do I feel that there is a need for them in a werewolf? Anything. I don't particularly feel a need for it, especially when they're so genetically jacked to have won. When you look at them and see how they're built, they're designed to be a part so they can get smoked, yet they're not a part. You've already pointed out, Mike, I've had to argue with you, how they're not like seps, but yet they're like families, these clutches. So how is it they got separated, smoked, and killed? And these people would tell you in their own writing, oh, during the War of Rage, you tricked us. You're cunning. You cheated. You were so... And I'm like, cheated? Cunning? Slap-ass, only one of us here can... 200 million years of knowledge and memory and war that you brag about of being unbeatable with. That's what you had. And you could pull on it in a second. Like DJ said, anything you could do, I could do better because it's already been done better than you. It's that simple. Yet you're going to say dirty pool when some mortals came into your area and hung out, learned to live off the land. And oh, they were werewolf kin. And they told the werewolves where you were. So then the werewolves came in, snuck in and poisoned your clutches and killed your kin. And then came to slaughter you because it's the War of Rage.
I just want to say I ain't never seen a wolf or a hyena fuck with an alligator.
Ever. I'm glad you did it because the biggest point I almost forgot about in this book that made me really start laughing, and I'm not going to miss recording it. So the first mention of were skunks is in this book and where whales.
And don't forget the Minotaur at Crete was an Apis.
Hold on. They kept that shit in the 20th, right? They came out, we came back in that book and they made it, right? We knew of the Comestas that was talked, but they actually kept that and brought it back. Like, you might like that. And don't forget the war pig with like bear tusk, ham foot, the dreaded hero that tried to wage war, defend the Garal. And I'm reading this stuff. It's like an excerpt that says, just to remind you folks, there's basically a shapeshifter for every animal that was ever out there. It's just that the Pharaoh just didn't treat them seriously. They were like, nothing. And then I sat there and got offended. I was like, wait a second. I can think of so many badass animals other than like freaking gators that exist in the world. Like, I mean, you got bears, cool. You got wolves, but like, man, why not were-owls? That's terrifying as it is. What about a were-eagle? Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's bring that shit out. Like, let's get real creative. But a were-whale? What, a killer whale? You're telling me a pod of killer whales that were a fair... Like, you could see them kind of living out in the cold and having a sadistic streak to them that those animals apparently possess, and they just call it playful. Being out there living off what they do, whatever, and then, like, the Rokia being like, we leave them alone because they hunt us for our liver. Wait a second.
They're not very nice.
Where orcas are more badass than that, but you're laughing at them because they're were-whales? Like, where's that hatred come from? Well, they really eat mostly algae when you get to the bigger fair. Like, you know what I mean? Like the blue whale fera capsizing oil ships. We don't want people playing those. And I'm like, then why'd you mention it, man? Like, you literally threw fera animal combo to everything. This means there were plans thrown at them to try to make an animal book. Where everything's where Farah everything. And when I saw that, I went, yeah,
man, if you want to get your furry on, why are we stopping it? That's all I'm saying.
Thank you.
Unless we saying Guile was just like, let's just try out, you know, where skunk don't work out, we just got to release them quietly, right? Maybe that's where the Naga are around and they release their memory.
But the crowning achievement is this McCullough book. And I was like, okay, all right, yeah, this stuff has to be burnt. Okay, but you did it. We're not done. There's two more. Let's see if they do better. But to finish this out, of course, they were pointing out that these guys are so much better socially, though. So McCullough, let's just point out what they do. Their enemies are the Gru. Not we still got bad blood. There's still issue. They say enemies. We see Gru, we kill Gru, except Peter. Peter's special.
Right.
He got that memory.
And the Haken.
Because Peter and the Haken, we got to make exceptions for others. So, look, guys, if you come to my clutch in North America and you're a werewolf, we're going to kill you unless you bring beer. That's all I'm saying. Give us a reason is what it is, instead of kill you on sight, because that's how we treat our enemies, right? So, whatever. I'll let them draw that for what it is. They also appear to be enemies of humans because their biggest problem is the fact that the world is being strip mined and removed and evolving. And technology, like it ever was for the werewolves, is getting out of control. And if that's the common cause and that's the common purpose and that's what we do, well, now you're writing over the story of werewolves. If they were worried about the ecosystem and whatnot to that degree and they were the guardians of it, you already said you were the guardians first and you did the guardianship better, but you somehow lost the war to these wolves that you claim to be better than and more stronger than and more powerful and wrote a precedent and in the book and in the mechanics. Back up, they are stronger and more powerful. But the worm killed them once, but then you came back proving you would be stronger than the werewolves who wouldn't come back if you killed them because they're facing an apocalypse. So what I ask here to you guys to round this down, because we've been on it a while, does the McCullough fit in your universe for saying there's room for them in Werewolf the Apocalypse? Like, if we pitched you and you were the producers of this and said whether or not we're going to make this a book, would you say, shelf this idea for an entirely separate game. A lot of content in here, but we need to breathe this out in different ways so it can have its own space to grow. Or would you say, put it with the werewolves? I think you're onto something, kid.
So I'm not dealing with a McCullough PC. I'm just not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not dealing with it. They are interesting in so much as just, you know, some happenstance, you come upon the graves that used to be a clutch, except one of them ain't really dead. and you and your players get 90 minutes to talk to the memory of the ancient dinosaur before he goes back to nap time. Sure. But like, no, beyond that, too much.
I think they're better off as NPCs, to be completely honest with you, because it's already high strain enough as it is. Even when we get to the Naga book, I remember reading the Naga book thinking, oh man, I want to be a player for this, but then it's a separate story. Same thing kind of happens here with the McCauley book. You think to yourself, oh, great powers, these things are huge. But what would you do in a game like this? The only redeeming quality that I saw originally as the book started to end was, if you were that much better, now you got to eat humble pie because you can't be that much better. So the only thing you could offer these people is to let them know the apocalypse is coming. Don't worry, it's just cyclical. So you really just need us to let you know how to get through it. Because you either sleep it off, we'll tell you how to prepare for it. But outside of it, you're not fighting any war. You're really not being able to be a huge contributor. And for most people, like, we think about everything, even the crazy batshit story of that, which is the Rat King. We kind of understood, like, all right, they're warriors, they do whatever, this is how they act out. But if you're the memory and you're supposed to clutch onto that memory and or supply that memory, most people don't want to do that. Most people just want to get in there to think and fight. If you're playing this, this is where you actually spend the most amount of time in contemplation. At least with the girl, you know, you were healing. Here, you're doing a lot of the thinking and you're telling people rationally why they should or shouldn't do something, right? One of the things even mentioned in the book is sometimes it's just better to surrender. You think any player is going to surrender when you have the ability to be Godzilla and just stomp around? And the crazier part about it is this was the first version of it, because when we talk about the Zhonglong better in the Henge Yokai book, they flesh out what the McCauley should have been better anyway, because they're the ones that are actually giving the memory out. They're the ones that actually have the position of scholarship where you actually get to see it in play in an environment where it fosters it, and you let the Garo do what they got to do and you take the position. But here in the McCauley book, it just seems like that scene in Black Man when Jason Alexander is throwing things against the wall. The Pope messed around with a goat. And that's what we're going to write about this week. The one thing, though, that this book does mention that hasn't been brought up at one point or another is that the son is the son of a bitch. Unlike Luna, who might just get mad and go, like, you shouldn't have done that. If you offend the sun takes it out in you in some way. Your feathers start to molt. If you were a Korax, maybe your scales start to become a little bit loose. You don't even know how it happens, but the sun gets mighty pissed at people who don't pay it its proper tribute.
But they worship Helios as much as they worship Luna. I mean, that's that they're a dual worship society in that. They get right with it. They recognize the night and the day, and they still pay homage to it. I thought that was cool too. But let me hit you with this. What I said is that this does have a place in Werewolf if this book is kept to a region. Now, I'm only saying this because my expectation was Rage Across Amazon is a fantastic book. It's great for World of the Apocalypse, for war and different factions, and it hints at what the McCauley are and what they do. The ghost raptors seem mysterious and badass, the way the forest groove to them, the whole nine. And I was down. I was down for the Were Dino. I really was. And I said to myself, but that's where they stay. They're in the Amazon. You thought you killed them. This is where they survive, and you came. Their back's against the wall, and they're swinging for the fences. You might get their help, but the whole point came. We got to get these great people on it. Man, listen, I'm a fan of Transformers. Yeah, I liked it as a little kid. And who didn't like the Dinobots? And if you didn't, you're not my friend. Stop listening and go away. Because Grimlock was my favorite dino, okay? Me, Grimlock, me defend Autobots. And Grimlock wasn't the brightest Dinobot ever built, but he was part of the crew that couldn't get their ass kicked. I love watching Decepticons, as cool as they were. How do we fight this? You know, and then Megatron's like, get out there, Starscream, destroy him. Yeah. And it's like, okay, and Starscream's like, how the hell do we fight this guy? And Grimlock's like, me Grimlock, you're not an Autobot. No, me Grimlock eat you, me hungry. And it's like, well, we can't argue with Adobo. Adobo wins. We're like, we gotta run. Well, why? He's a dino. What are you gonna do with that? And I said, okay, but I felt this book captured that.
Yeah,
that this was here, that if they're dinosaurs over there, and I said Rage Across Amazon reminds me of that. If you think back to that badass comic where you see like the T-Rex come out of the water and it smushes the Fomori and starts eating everybody, and that werewolf pisses himself and passes out, like, what the? And just falls over, and I was like, that's the reaction any being would have. Okay, if it was a vampire, it would be comical how they Rorschach that the Sabbat got devoured. You know, and then it just slinks back into the water. You know what would happen? Just imagine, get back to wherever home base is, and they go, don't go in that fucking jungle. It's like, what's that? You know how we have territory and we're like, we'll fuck you up if you come here? He's like, yeah, they didn't tell you what's in this jungle, man. It's like, what do you mean? Dinosaurs are in the jungle. man, you're putting me on. And I take you over to see that footprint the size of your damn car we came in. And you hear a growl in the distance. And I go, that means we leave now. We right get now. And bring the car and bring the car. And if you leak an oil, sop it up with your best shirt. Let's go. You just leave. Don't come back. Here there be dragons. And that would have been badass because you'd have been like, cool. McCauley got like Amazon lock. That's where they're at, but nowhere else. War rage killed them back that far. Gru would be real sorry if they knew that. And now they might know, but here it is. Don't give me a story about Pete and other people and were-rabbits and bullshit. Just keep it there. And then you have it good. And they're the memory, and that's all that's left. All right, cool. Wait a minute. What about Bastet? Throw him in Egypt. Bast is in the title. Own the title and have him be there. Now, they can wander around and do whatever and say hi to folk because they're not completely dead, but give them a territory. Now, why do I say this? For each pharaoh that they have in existence in actual books now, they could have said they're in this region. That's where they're at, but no farther. The werewolves won that war rage and took territories and killed them that far. And that's it. And that owns the great tragedy. You could see, damn, this is why Gaia is losing. This is why there's an apocalypse. And they did it to themselves. Whoa, right? That hits heavier. That gives you more onus. And also, it makes your players go, we don't have to play werewolves all the time. That's that one campaign. Hey, guys, tonight, let's play the Bastet. Let's get that going. All right, cool. Hey, let's jump back, go out to Hawaii and jump in with the were-sharks and see how that do. Oh, yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun. Let's do that. I didn't know what it is. They came out that Blood Din Tides or whatever. Let's see what's going on. That allows you to explore the books they've made in a capacity to get you to feel these books and what's going on. But we all know what this is, cross-genre pollination. And it's not that I'm not a fan. It's that you need to make stage for people to be the focus. And I've never seen a player group go, oh, we're all werewolves? Yeah, not Tim. What's Tim? He's a McCauley. And then the werewolves and werewolf players go, badass, dude. We need one of those. I always see the players go, oh, he got to play McCauley? How come I don't? Every time. You know what I mean? It's always, even if they don't say it, they're like, oh, it's a McCauley. Yeah, you're going to take Krenos to fight the Pentex team? He goes dino form, and what do you got? Right? You're sitting back taking ag and hoping you don't die, and you're over here going, rah! I mean, Grimlock, and you get ass kicked, Pentex. You know, it's like, oh, okay. There it is. You know, I'm just saying, there's better ways to do it. I don't know. It's not that I'm not a fan, it's that I wouldn't even bother the hassle because I can't even feel the story for what would be told unless you made it where if everybody can play anything, then nobody cares about the plight of your extinction because it feels like you're everywhere. Does that make sense?
It could be that the best werewolf game is a Henge Yokai game.
I won't make you stand on that. That's a lie. We'll get to that book, but that's a lie.
Right, I haven't read that one yet. At least not for review purposes.
You talking out your ass at that point. That's a lie. We won't even get into that. Me and DJ know, we did Kindred of the East, and we still got people writing us being like, so on chapter 2, what does that word mean? What's that spelling, DJ? Like, he the only Asian that in existence and the internet don't exist. It's like, come on. But all right, we get it.
What I mean when I say that, though, is like, okay, if your group of players is just werewolves, we've played that game. We love those games. If your group of players is just fucking a clutch, right? We all take a sun auspice. I have trouble coming up with what we're doing, but I'm sure a fan of this book could figure it out. But if we're going to do everybody can be anything, right? The Beast Courts have that.
What I will tell you right now, because you're bringing up something we didn't review. Like you said, you didn't really know it too much. I know it well. And it doesn't mix. And they do keep it specific to that area for a damn good reason. It's because that product should have existed on its own because it absolutely would dominate based on what you can do with that. Okay. They have better enemies. They have a better hierarchy. They have a better purpose. They're better acclimated to go do stuff as a group and to get along. It's the biggest point. We'll get over that. But if you check out that book, that's really what it does. Now, other people will tell you, we've been playing Werewolf for years. We love how we do it. We're all loyal and get down. I'm not talking to you people who have a home game and you haven't played with anybody outside your home. That doesn't count that way. Well, I had a home game too once upon a time, and I'm trying to build one again, but your home team is always going to have a better take on it because you got to make concessions for them and you're going to get along because you want to have a game. And if you don't have people to play with at your home game and you did, you understand why, because that fallout is real and they don't come back. Online gave you avenue to play again, but what did you learn? Man, it's new people. And new people have different takes, and new people have different wants and expectations and whatever. And the gaming companies realized that too. So they said, we got to change these books from being so specific to only a group of people in play style and switch it to where anybody can play any way they want. And nobody likes it. They don't like writing that way any more than you, the fans, like receiving it, but they got to do it so you can have your view and not have it disrupted. Right? Everybody wants a safe space, but I kind of believe in this theory. I had heard this said online once in a skit, and it cracked me up when there's a thing out there that exists where this guy, this comedian, does voiceovers for the nations. So like for Russia and America and England, and they're in this debate, and Russia says something about flight superiority. And he says, I'm not afraid of you because America has a woke military. And America fires back with, yeah, we got a woke military, but every one of our troops that's painted nails can still hold an M16. So we're okay with that. He says, also, our idea of a safe space is the cockpit of an F-22. So I'm still pretty good. That's Bob. That's Bob. Have your safe space, but don't expect me to get soft because you need everybody involved and included. I still know the word no and the power of holding to my own guns and molding a game to make sense. And I'm willing to bring war crimes to do it. Okay. I will defend your right to have the game your way any day of the week is what I'm saying. But if you're telling writers to write interesting things and they go that direction, that includes this book. Let me give you a tidbit. Fuck me in my opinions. I'll be the first to tell you that. If you don't think I ever think that, I think that every time. My opinions are mine. They should be subject to change, and you reserve the right to change them as I reserve the right to try to change your opinion. But if you can't step to the table and offer something better or a viewpoint that makes something make sense, or even worse, you see where I'm coming from and new, I just wish I could have done that better. There's a reason writers are forced to write a certain way. Usually it's a deadline, and they got to get quick with it. Didn't have the time they'd like, can't get the full idea out, and then that explains the story. Other times it's because someone comes in and goes, we're not paying you for that. We took these quizzes and figured out that the actual demographic prefers what you know about a demographic. You don't even write for the, okay, yeah, I got to listen to you. You don't contract it, okay. And that's what happens. You can't fault them for it. It's a business, and they got to say, well, we're told to tell you now, it's for everybody. Okay. I suppose. And then I got to nod my head and move on. And then there's people like me and do a review. I mean, I'm free to tell you, keep doing it your way. I do it mine. But my way says this. Macaulay, I'm going to keep them to a region that makes them special and keep them hidden so they're special. NPC is usually the best way to go. Mm-hmm. Unless I do an all Macaulay game, I'm going to find a way to make that intimate. And then I'm going to find a way to tone down the ridiculousness or the place and go off the res and make it meaningful and feel good. And the only way to do that is story. You got to get in good and get story. I just find that a lot of people don't want to pay that kind of time and attention to it. And as an ST, that's a long time you got to do to get people psyched up to do that. A lot harder than Werewolf. I could tell anybody what a werewolf is. You've seen Twilight, Werewolf in London. I mean, you've seen movies. You know what a werewolf. Well, now let me explain guy in a different thing. Are there other shapeshifters? We don't talk about Care Bears. Just move them on. They exist, but we ain't going to talk about them. Just move on. So that's it. And really, the worst thing about this is that the humor involved in it is the fact that there's a lot of potential they were trying to think of with the different Pharaoh creatures, and the Macaulay were a super important part, clearly. But they're dumbed down when you realize they're like one of the last books they kicked out for the series, and they didn't make them that special, really. They just kind of made them, like, even when you get down to the powers, I know they didn't intend to say, well, you can pick and choose your powers, you come up with it. That doesn't sound like somebody had time to see their image realized, especially with all the Dinosaur King references and Dragon Kings and Lords and shit like that. And you're telling me to take, what was it, a Naticulating Membrane as a power adaptation, and somehow I got to feel awesome at that? But it's possible. It sounds like to me you were about to pitch stuff through on the book just to save space and, hey, let them pick it. That was the easy way to go. Because otherwise, make them like dragons, yo, and then call it a day. But can't have everybody belching fire after all. It's to be unfair to the vampires. So, but anyway, we're going to wind this down. We've been going long enough. I'm going to call it before we hit the critical mark that I have up here for the timer. So, I want to thank you guys for waxing poetic. You can hate us all you like to. You know where we are. Join us. You can join our Patreon and tell me, you son of a bitch, I have a lizard tattoo. Okay, that's great. I actually think lizard tattoos are cool. I don't have a tattoo, but you can tell me all about it. I don't hate you. I don't dislike you. It's just I clown on this book because I think of all the books I've read, this one pained me to go through.
Because better or worse than Ratkin?
No, the Ratkin made sense. The Ratkin made sense. I told you that. I could see what went on. It's just they pulled the trigger, and I don't feel it in the World of Darkness that it worked, according to what they said, right? It just, that's the problem. You'd even hit me with another book, Chaos Factor. All the crazy happening Chaos Factor, I didn't feel it. It didn't hit your canon, so why does the book exist? Well, because we already put it out there and people bought it. Yeah, yeah, that's true. You're right. I get that. But there's still part of me that goes, not in my world, right? is what I feel like with it. But some of it has to exist. And there are seeds of it affecting it in places, just not the impact I wanted. And that's it. So we all know that a lot of these books originate in the world of the Edgelord beginning. I think nobody can contest the fact that White Wolf was the king of the Edgelords of making books back in the day, where it was like a trope to hire the most gothiest goth guy that could possibly goth. And that would be like your front runner at the booth of White Wolf. And then like your writers would like come out and they got their turtlenecks on and they're going for glam. And they're like, hi, I'm David for White Wolf. What did you need? And then you're like, oh, yeah, where's the latest vampire book? I'm just looking at film. Good choice, vampire. I knew I liked you. And then they walk over and get the book. You want two? I heard you wanted two. I'll take eight because it's Gen Con. And I paid a $400 ticket to come here for the weekend. And I'm trying to get this shipped home, please. Oh, I love Gen Con. That's what they were like. They like tried way too hard a lot of the time. Or they tried to be that drunk uncle at the bar for the first time. You know what I mean? Everybody else experienced this for the adult for some of a weird reason when you first went out and it was like, you could order a drink at the bar, but it was non-alcoholic and the adult there was like, don't worry, kid, one day you'll get to get beer. That's what I felt like going to the White Wolf booth. Like they're sitting out here and going, yeah, we're here. We'll talk books, but not here. I was actually told that but one time at Gen Con, by the way, by people working the White Wolf booth. They're like, we don't do it here. But the after party, come out there, we'll talk all you want to. And I was like, no, you don't. You're going to be half drunk and in the bag and ain't saying shit. Anybody knew that. If you can't talk here, you never are. And I could go on. But the point is, it was a different era. The era now is like, can we get business and our money's worth? Kind of like ending the podcast. So thanks for listening, everybody. DJ Mike, thank you. I'm going to stop my tangent before I really get in that memory. And we'll call it a day. I don't hate anybody, but let's just say I've lived an interesting life. And I hope you have too. So you know who you are. Have a good day.
Peace. Bye, folks.
Thank you for listening to our 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade podcast. If you liked what you heard, please reach out and let us know on Twitter at 25 Years of VTM, at our email, info@25yearsvtm.com, on Facebook at www.facebook.com/25yearsvtm, or on our website, www.25yearsvtm.com. If you would like to support us, we can be found at patreon.com/25yearsofvampirethemasquerade.